Somehow shape the future. I would hope and pray I'd touch lives by the way I live today.
Steve Donahue with another episode of Legacy Podcast, equipping you to build your legacy. I'm not going to spend a lot of time in the introduction today. I'm going to refer you to the show notes and, of course, the website, which is www.thelegacypodcast.com. There you will be able to find links to all the resources that we have available and information about this episode and all the other episodes that are available. But this show will be a recording of a message that I preached recently to the church in which I pastor from Esther chapter 6. So stay tuned for that.
I periodically like to watch old westerns. Some of you may like to as well. And when I was growing up, I used to like to watch westerns. And there's a couple things about westerns, though, that seem very interesting. Of course, the old joke is that the good guy can be riding on horseback with a six-shooter and shoot 10 rounds out of a six-shooter without reloading and get the bad guy every time riding on a horse at 50 yards. And so we might say, well, yeah, that's just the way westerns are. And there's some truth to that. But one of the things I like about westerns is it always seems like the good guy shows up right at the right time. Doesn't it seem that way? You know, the storyline typically is that the bad guys have taken over the town. And, the sheriff's out of town or something, and he's not there. And so the townspeople are all scared and worried. And just at the nick of time, here comes the sheriff riding in on his white horse, to save the day. Isn't that the way it normally goes? And we think, well, that's just fairy tale. That doesn't really happen in real life, does it? And yet I wonder, because sometimes in life things happen in a time frame that is just right. Now, the secular world calls that coincidences. We've probably used that word before. What a coincidence that would be happening, that we would meet that guy right at that right time, or this were to happen, right? But is it a coincidence? Or is it the mighty hand of God working out in His providence, His will? We're going to see a situation like that today. And I think it will convince us of the very reality that God is working in situations of time at the right time to accomplish His word. Have you ever been in a situation where you thought if something doesn't happen right away, tragedy is certainly going to befall us? And that is the situation that we find in chapter 6. If you recall, chapter 5 ends with Haman determined to put to death Mordecai. He's got to his limit of his patience with waiting. We already know that there is a plan to exterminate all of the Jews. And yet Mordecai has so offended Haman that Haman can't wait till that time. And so he has said, okay, what I'm going to do, and he got, of course, instructions from his wife and from his wise men saying, what you need to do is you need to build gallows and make sure that Mordecai is hung on those gallows. And so that's what his plan is. He says, that's a good plan. I'm going to do that. And chapter 5 ends with that. And without giving away the storyline, as we probably already have read it, or at least I read it this morning already, and we know somewhat of it, I will give you a hint as to what happens. And that can actually be found in Proverbs 26, verse 27. And it says this, "Whoever digs a pit will fall into it, and he who rolls a stone will have it roll back on him." You ever try to do something like that? Trying to move something really heavy, a boulder or something, you're like, and you just get it, but you have to rest, and you rest, and what happens? Comes back to it. Look, that's the idea of this proverb, and what we're going to see is that this proverb actually comes to truth through this passage. And really, there are three divisions that can be broken down in this chapter. The first one is in verses 1 through 3, and it's the king's difficulty sleeping. Ahasuerus' difficulty sleeping. We see this in verses 1 through 3. It says, that night the king could not sleep. So one was commanded to bring the book of the records of the Chronicles, and they read before the king. Now, it had been 5 years since the assassination plot that had revealed Mordecai, and yet he had not been rewarded. And it says that Ahasuerus' sleep left him, and so he calls someone to come and to read from the Chronicles, or the records of the Chronicles. Now, I don't know how many of you all have ever had a challenge sleeping or not. I have periodically, as I'm sure you have as well. And you know, we're not told exactly why sometimes our sleep leaves us. I think sometimes it's because something we've eaten or drink, you know, and it's just not settling right on our stomach. Sometimes there's emotional issues, stress, or, you know, something like that that can cause us not to sleep. Sometimes it's, you know, dogs in the bed, they're tossing and turning and we can't sleep. You know, that never happens to me, but sometimes there are different issues. We're not told exactly why it was that Ahasuerus couldn't sleep at this point, but we do know one thing, based upon the result of this, that it was the mighty hand of God that was working in the events so that through his lack of sleep and through his insomnia, the will of God might be done. And so Ahasuerus, what he decides to do, he says, look, I can't sleep, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to... Now, we don't know whether he decided to read from the records of the, basically the minutes of the kingdom or not, whether he decided to do that because it was boring enough literature that it was going to make him go to sleep, or whether it was a time to get some work done. And I'm sure that you've had situations of both where you're like, look, I got to go to sleep. What's something boring that I can read that, you know, and you start to read and that makes you kind of drowsy and you go off to sleep. And it could be that that's what he was thinking. He's like, what's the most boring stuff we got? Oh, it's the minutes. I'll read the minutes, you know. Or whether he was saying, look, I'm up. I can't go to sleep. Now's a good time to review the history of the kingdom so that I can, you know, plan for the future. And, you know, history is assigned to the future and all this kind of stuff. So maybe he was trying to get some. We don't know exactly what his purpose was. But we do know that it just so happened that he couldn't sleep. And it just so happened that because he couldn't sleep, he just so happened to choose to read from the records of the Chronicles of the Kings, or Chronicles of the Kingdom. And in verse 2 it says, and it was found written that Mordecai had told Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs, the doorkeepers, who had sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. If you recall, this was the plot that was revealed earlier in Esther, where Mordecai had found out that there were these two doorkeepers in the kingdom that were going to cause this assassination plot. And so Mordecai tells Esther, and Esther tells the king in behalf of Mordecai. But Mordecai is never rewarded for it. And if you recall, when we looked at that, the very next verse says that Haman was promoted. And so Mordecai was just skipped over. And so it just so happens, you see all this coming together? It just so happens that while the king was reading, he happened to be reading a very section in this history. 5 years ago, it's been, since this event took place, just so happened to be reading 5 years prior where Mordecai had revealed this information and had not been rewarded for it. So verse 3, then the king said, what honor or dignity has been bestowed on Mordecai for this? And the king's servant who attended him said, nothing has been done for him. And so it just so happens that the king decides at this time, 5 years after the event, to go back and reward Mordecai for what he had done. Isn't this amazing? All these events taking place within these three verses of history and what seems to be the result of it. Have you ever been unable to sleep for some reason? I'm sure that you have. And the question we have to ask ourselves is why? Do we know why all the time? We don't know. In fact, many times it's just because we can't. But sometimes God is working out his will to be done. And so every time that I can't sleep, what I like to do is I like to pray. Sometimes it makes me go to sleep. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with praying yourself to sleep. That's, you know, probably a precious thing to do in the sight of the Lord. But I always pray because I figure if I'm awake, maybe it's because God wants me awake. Maybe he wants me praying for something. Maybe he wants me right now. Someone's dealing with an issue and you want, you know. And so I always like to pray when I'm awake. But we don't, or when I'm asleep. No, when I should be asleep, but I'm awake. There you go. That's one. And the reality of it is, though, that in this case, we know that God was using the king's insomnia to be able to bring about his will. And so the second division we find in verses 4 through 10 is Haman's dashed hope. Haman's dashed hope. And in verses 4 and 5, so after the king decides, look, I'm going to reward Mordecai for what he's done. It says in verse 4, so the king said, who is in the court? Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace to suggest that the king hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. And the king's servant said to him, Haman is there, standing in the court. And the king said, let him come in. Now, it just so happened that Haman had arrived. Now, from his perspective, he had arrived just at the wrong time and just the wrong reason. But from God's perspective, he arrives just at the right time and just the right reason, so that now he might be able to use Haman to actually give honor to Mordecai. And so the language here seems to indicate that there was a surprise that Haman was already in the court. And it's very possible that what happened was that, if you recall in chapter 5, he left to go build the gallows. He may have spent all night. So the king was all night awake reading from the Chronicles. Haman was probably awake all night overseeing the building of the gallows. And so early morning, he walks into the courtroom. Now, ordinarily, Haman must have slept in some because they were surprised that he was there so early. And so here he is walking in early. The king finds out about it and says, Haman, he's the perfect one to be able to do this. So verse 6, so Haman came in, and the king asked him, what shall be done for the man whom the king delights to honor? Now Haman thought in his heart, whom would the king delight to honor more than me? We've already looked at Haman's arrogance, haven't we? In the last chapter, we looked at how arrogant he was when he brought his friends together and he brought his wife together and talked about all the things that he had been blessed with and had the king had given him and all of his children he had. And he was bragging about all the things that he had. And we see another picture of his arrogance here. He comes before the king and he's thinking to himself, who could possibly have the king's delight more than me? And so he thinks to himself, well, let's see, what would I want? Now we know that he is already as high as he could possibly be in the kingdom without being the king himself. And so he's not going to ask the king for the throne, right? I mean, that would probably be a, you know, sentence for his death. So he's not going to do that. So what does he do? It says, and Haman answered and said, for the man whom the king delights to honor, let a royal robe be brought of which the king has worn, and a horse on which the king has ridden, which has a royal crest placed on his head. Then let this robe and the horse be delivered to the hand of the one, the king's most noble princes, and may array the man whom the king delights to honor, and parade him on horseback through the city square, and proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. What's he asking for here? He's asking for to be treated one day like the king's treated. That's what he says. He can't ask for to actually be the king, but he says, look, king, this is what I really want. I want to be treated like you for a day. And so, let me borrow one of your robes. Let me borrow one of your horses. One of the crowns the crests that goes on one of the horses, and put that on the horse. And let me borrow one of your best servants. And let me go out in the city square as though I were you and receive all the praise from the men and the people. Isn't this an arrogant request? Haman just kind of goes to show. Now, I have to back up for a moment and say that sometimes what we wish for is sometimes what we should get. And other times what we wish for is not what we should get. Now, I have tried to use this a couple of times with my kids when it comes to discipline. Now, they've caught on. In fact, I tried to use it this morning with a couple of them, and they wouldn't tell me the answer because they knew where I was going with it. But what happens is if two of them are fighting, and they both done something wrong, and I can't really figure out what kind of discipline to give them, I'll ask person A what I should do for person B as a form of discipline. And then whatever person A says should be done for discipline, I give it to person A. And then vice versa, I set person A or patient B aside and I say, what should you do for person A? And then they tell me and I actually give it to them. And so it's a way of kind of having them get what they think the other person should have for doing it. And I've done this a couple times, but I tried to do it this morning. And person A told me, I'm not telling you. And I said, why not? And this person says, because you're going to give it to me. And so it can only go so far. They learn the tricks of the trade, if you will. But that's kind of what's happening here with Haman. Now, he doesn't know it. But the king is asking Haman, what should be done for the person who I delight to honor? And Haman's thinking, oh, well, this is bound to be me, so this is what I would want. And then listen to what it says. In verse 10, then the king said to Haman, hurry, take the robe, the horse, as you have suggested, and do so for Mordecai. Can you imagine what Haman must have thought when he heard that? I mean, his heart must have just sunk with sorrow. At first, he probably thought to himself, did I hear that? Mordecai? And then it turned to anger. Mordecai? The one that wouldn't bow to Mordecai? I mean, we don't read that in the text, right? Sometimes you have to kind of put yourself in the situation and the mood of what's going on with the story. And so, sure enough, here what we find is the thing's turned, right? The situation has definitely turned on Haman, and these words must have just been hard for him to hear. Let me continue with verse 10. Do so for Mordecai the Jew, who sits within the king's gate. Leave nothing undone of all that you have spoken. That must have just been overwhelming for Haman. And we'll get to a little bit more of that actually when it starts to take place here. But, you know, this reminds me of what sometimes, we like to call it, you get what you deserve, right? And here, all this time, Mordecai has been excluded and Haman's been elevated. And we're thinking the whole time through the story, when's justice going to occur? Well, here we go. We're starting to see the tables turned. I don't know if you've ever experienced something where you really expected to get one thing and you got the other, and how devastating that is. I won't go into a lot of detail, but the church that I was in Kentucky prior to coming to Virginia, I came home with my family one day, and it was October. Well, what's October? You guys know because you've done really well. It's Pastor Appreciation Month, right? And so I was coming home one day, and I saw a bunch of cars in the church. We lived in the parsonage right on the church property, and I saw a bunch of cars in the church property, and it was October. And I thought to myself, well, then I got home, and there was a couple of deacons at my door. And I thought to myself, well, I wonder what they're here for. And they said, well, we want to see you at the church. I said, oh, what could this be for? And I got thinking, I said, oh, it's October. I bet they're going to give me a pastor appreciation celebration or something, a surprise party for me. This is unbelievable. I can't believe it. This is it. And I started getting really excited. And I get over to the church, and my prayer partner, who was one of the deacons, wasn't there. And I thought to myself, uh-oh. Maybe this isn't what I was expecting. And sure enough, as the meeting progressed, I realized they were asking for my resignation. And I thought to myself, here I am going to this meeting and think I'm going to be praised and honored. And instead, what happens is I get rejected and asked to leave. That hurts when that happens, doesn't it? And here's exactly what is taking place with Haman. He's going there thinking he is going to be praised and elevated. Instead, what happens is he actually goes and finds out not only is he not being praised and elevated, but his enemy is being praised and elevated. And to make matters worse, he's the one who has to lead him out and do all the things that he was asking to be done to him. This is serious. So what do we find in verses 11 through 14? We find Mordecai's drastic reversal. Mordecai's drastic reversal. Look with me, beginning in verse 11. It says, "So Haman took the robe and the horse, arrayed Mordecai, and led him on horseback through the city square." Now, I want to pause there for a moment. I looked earlier at what Haman was probably thinking. I wonder what the conversation was like as Haman is preparing Mordecai and the horse. I wonder if they exchanged a lot of words or whether it was a lot of just under the breath comments. I kind of think to myself that as Haman's preparing this, he's probably saying, at least under his breath, "I can't believe I have to do this for Mordecai. I mean, Mordecai, I won't be. I just can't believe." Now, he may be doing some, you know, expletives under his breath. I mean, we don't know exactly. But it must have been just so aggravating for him to have to do this for Mordecai, the one he wanted dead. And so it says he put him on horseback through the city square. Now, the city square was the population place. This was the place where all of the business was conducted. It was the marketplace. It was the Walmart of the day, so to speak. I mean, it was the place where everybody went and conducted business, and it was packed. The city streets were packed, especially during midday. Well, that is why Haman, of course, wanted to be able to go down to the city square and be able to be marched through, because everybody in the kingdom would know this guy's being praised. And so they're marching down into this city square. And by the way, this is the same city square that just a day earlier, Mordecai was down there in sackcloth and in ashes mourning for his people. And the very next morning, he is put on a horse to be marched through there in honor. Boy, how things change in 24 hours, huh? It's amazing what God can do in just a short time in the reversal. So verse 12, it says, "After Mordecai went back to the king's gate, but Haman hurried to his house mourning with his head covered." He's embarrassed. I mean, earlier we read about how Haman would ride through the city and everybody would have to bow down to him. You remember that? How he was riding through the city, everybody, but Mordecai, of course, wouldn't bow down to him. That was part of the reason why he was so angry with Mordecai. And so now what we have is we have Mordecai riding on the king's horse, wearing the king's robe, being displayed as the king for the day. And Haman is not riding anywhere. He's actually leading the horse along, shouting out. Now, we don't know, of course, how he shouted out. I have the feeling this is kind of what took place. "This is the one who the king delights to honor." And Mordecai on the horse said, "I didn't hear you. Louder?" I mean, he was probably taking advantage of it. I can't help but think that's probably what happened. And so he'd say, "This is the man the king delights to honor." What was that, Haman? I didn't hear that. Let everybody know what's that going on. Yeah. There was probably some of that going on. And no doubt, at the end of it, it says Mordecai went back to the gate. That's where he normally did his business. He went back to the gate. But it says Haman went back home mourning with his head covered. His tail was tucked between his legs, if you know the phrase that they have with a dog. And so what does he do? He calls together the same people he had bragged about before, remember? He'd called that group together, his wife and all of his wife's people, all of his friends, when he was bragging about how great it was. Now he calls them back together again. And in verse 13 it says, "When Haman told his wife Zeresh and all of his friends everything that had happened to him, his wise men and his wife Zeresh said to him, 'Oh, it's okay, Mordecai. You'll get him next time.'" Is that what they say? That's not what they said. It says, "If Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish descent, you will not prevail against him. but will surely fall before him. Now, isn't this interesting? Less than 24 hours earlier, probably, this same group of people had said, yeah, kill Mordecai. That's what you need to do. Build some gallows, put them on it. Why was there such a change? We're not told. We don't know why there was such a change of heart in these people. It could be that in that 24-hour time period, they have come across some prophecies of Scripture that indicated it. Maybe they had a dream. We don't know what it was, but they had a reversal of their attitudes towards Mordecai. At one time, they're like, yeah, get rid of him. You can do it, Haman. Just build some gallows and call it done. And now they're like, look, if it's against Mordecai you're trying to do and it's a Jew, forget it. You're history. You're going to fall. Not the words Haman probably wanted to hear. And yet, they were the words of truth. Now, I think it's interesting to note the word fall. It's used twice here in this verse. But it's used all the way through the book of Esther. It's a theme word. And we can see the whole course of the history of the book of Esther with that one word. Just for example, in Esther chapter 3, verse 7, it says that the lot fell on a certain day in order to persecute and exterminate the Jews. In Esther chapter 6, verse 10 and verse 13, that's what we have here. It says, hurry, take the robe and the horses you have suggested, and do so for Mordecai, the Jew who sits within the king's gate. Leave nothing undone of all that is spoken. When Haman told his wife Zeresh, we just read this, it says, before whom you have begun to fall is of Jewish descent. You will not prevail against him, but will surely fall before him. We haven't got to Esther chapter 7, verse 8, but it says there, when the king returned from the palace garden to the place of the banquet of wine, Haman had fallen across the couch, asking for mercy from Esther. And of course, we'll get to that, but Ahasuerus thinks he's actually trying to attack Esther, and that is another downfall for him. Esther chapter 8, verse 3 and verse 17, it says, now Esther spoke again to the king, fell down at his feet, and imploring him with tears and counteract the evil of Haman and Agag. So Esther now is falling down before the king to ask for the king's mercy. Verse 17, and in every province and city, wherever the king's command and decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and holiness. Then many of the people of the land became Jews because of fear of the Jews fell upon everyone. So now we have fear falling upon everyone because of the decree that was decreed to protect the Jews. And then finally, in chapter 9, we read this. Then the Jews gathered together in their cities throughout all the provinces of the king Ahasuerus to lay hands on those who sought their harm, and no one could withstand them because fear fell upon them and upon all the people. And all the officials of the province and satraps, the governors, and all those doing the king's work helped the Jews because the fear of Mordecai fell upon them. Because Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews, had plotted against the Jews to annihilate them and had cast Pur, and the lot had fell to consume them and to destroy them. And so the whole story of the book of Esther is this idea of what's falling at what time. The Pur, the lot falls to declare them to be killed on a certain day. And then Esther, or Mordecai falls, and then we have Haman falling, and then we have Haman falling again, and then we have Esther falling, and then we have the lot falling again, we have the fear falling. We have all these things falling down. The whole storyline is based upon this. And in this verse, what we have is we have the downfall of Haman beginning. When he goes before the people, his wife and all of the people, and it says, if it is true, then Mordecai the Jew is the one that you were about to fall under. It's all over for you. This is the beginning of the end. And sure enough. So let's review the providential timing of God. It just so happened that the king had insomnia the night before Haman was going to execute Mordecai on the gallows. It just so happened that the king decided to read from the record of the Chronicles while awake that particular night. And it just so happened that the place that the king read was an event 5 years earlier where Mordecai had revealed an assassination plot but had not yet been rewarded. And it just so happened the king decided to reward him after the event 5 years later. And it just so happened that Haman happened to be the first man to come into the court after the king's reading of the events. And it just so happened that by the time Mordecai or Haman had finished honoring Mordecai, it was the time for the banquet and the giving of the banquet, which allowed Haman no time for any more mischief. We didn't read that, but that's in verse 14. So could this all be a coincidence? Is it just matter-of-fact chance? Or is it the mighty hand of God working hidden behind the scenes to accomplish His word? I'm reminded of a poem by S.W. Foljambe in 1876. He wrote this: "Back of all the foes have plotted, back of all the saints have planned, back of schemes by men or demons moves a higher hidden hand. Warp and woof are heaven's making, all the pattern good and wise, though on earth's side oft perplexing, clear and right to heavenly eyes. All earth's agents act with freedom, choosing whether love or hate, faith in God or bold defiance. None are shackled slaves of fate. Yet the hand of God that guides is hidden, moving secret and unseen, firmly guiding life's great drama, every act and shifting scene. Every human wrath unknowing serves that all-controlling will. Man proposed, God disposes, all things His design fulfill. To that goal of all the ages, all of history's winding tend, and despite all foes or fraction, God proves victor in the end. Mysteries which hurt and baffle pass our power to understand, in the end are turned to blessing by that sovereign hidden hand. We see men planning and working only with their own more immediate and material interests in view, and yet a power behind them is noiselessly and effectually, though possibly for generations unobserved, overruling their actions to the furtherance of higher, more widely extended, and more permanent purposes." You see, that's the hidden hand of God, working sometimes behind the scenes in ways that we can't quite comprehend, but just at the right time, in just the right way, He works out the events in our lives and in the lives of His people so that He can accomplish His work. So what does this mean for you and me? What are we to take from this? What can we learn from this? How are we to act upon this? Well, a couple of things. Number one, trust God to work in His timing to bring about His will. Trust in God to work in His timing to bring about His will. Psalm 27, verse 14 says this: "Wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and He shall strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord." I can't help but think of Mordecai. 5 years. He told about the assassination plot. Nothing. Haman, his enemy, elevated, promoted, getting all the praise. Mordecai, one of the Jews, not only wasn't getting promoted, but became one of those who was determined for extinction. And he couldn't help but think, where is God in all this? Well, God showed up right at the right time to bring reversal. That's the way it is with us sometimes. We're thinking about our situation in life. We're saying to ourselves, where is God in the midst of this? What's He trying to do in my life? And then just right when we need it, God shows up right at the right time and right the right way. Wait on the Lord. Be of good courage, and He shall strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. Secondly, trust God that His timing is what is best. The sovereign God of the universe has better timing than you or I could ever have. What if Esther had not waited a couple days to reveal the real issue? What if she had gone immediately without the two banquets? What if Mordecai had already been rewarded for this intel? What if Ahasuerus had not had insomnia? What if Haman had gone home to sleep after building the gallows? The reality is, none of that happened. Why? Because the hidden hand of God was working to bring about His work. We can't live in the world of what ifs. We must live in a world of reality and trust that God is working in His time and in His way at just the right time and just the right way. Job chapter 35, verse 14 says, "Although you say you do not see Him, yet justice is before Him, and you must wait for there's many
who struggle every day. I think that it's time we start crying for our nation and bow our heads and pray. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy?" to this world, we'll have to say goodbye. But just like the plant that withers away, we will leave many seeds behind. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? What will you do to change your legacy?